All right, y'all, get ready for another edition of News and Trends with your hosts, Dave and Lynn.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to News and Trends with Dave and Lynn. I am one of your hosts, Mr. David Coker, proprietor of Dave Mark Ng, promoter, marketing specialist, extraordinary guy altogether. That's all I'm going to say here. And definitely good guy, definitely good guy. Let me introduce my partner, Mr. Leonard Young.
Yep, this is Leonard Young, CEO of National Black Guide, DelawareBlack.com. Dave, why are you looking at me like that?
See, that's what I'm saying.
It's so funny because Dave earlier was talking about, Leonard, you don't be looking at my videos, so I'll be trying to signal you. And now I look at you and you just mess up my intro like that.
I know, there you go. See?
All right, well. Anyone who listens to us already knows my intro anyway, because it's the most prominent intro by the only good guy on the show.
Yeah.
Okay. But how's everything going, Dave?
Man, everything's all right. If I can, stay in air conditioning, man, it's hot out there.
And you know, it's so funny, like I've not been outside today, so I don't get to revel in that yet.
It's hot out there, man. Ain't no joke. That's 90 something degrees out there, man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's and I was out earlier in it today, so I'm just saying it is hot. So, for those who was wondering where the summer is, it's here, y'all. It's definitely here. Yeah. So, how was your weekend?
Man, it was pretty good actually. So I think of course, Thursday night we're capping it, going to one of our DelawareBlack.com meetup events at Zali's Jazz Cucina in Old Newcastle. My buddy Dave Coker came out to support the event, and we actually saw some podcasters out there that we had connected with, and just some other people. So that was good. Then
shout out to Janice King. Getting a chance to meet Janice King, and let's just say there was a art exhibit going on, one of Delaware's top young artists.
Demetrius Bullock.
That stuff, he had some nice stuff in there.
No, he did.
Price
tags were nice too. I was like, oh, okay, I'm glad to wait a couple paychecks to add up.
But we're hoping to have Mr. Bullock on our show sometime soon. And this guy, he's real. He's definitely real, man. So
he has some children's books too.
Yeah. He mentioned that. I was like, so he's doing pretty well, and he's a real cool guy.
Very down to earth.
Yeah, got a chance to meet some of your other friends and some people that are really doing some good things in business. You know, it's great when we get a chance to hang out with Black people doing great things. You know what I mean?
Yep, no, I definitely agree. And I think Friday, to be honest, Friday was a chill day. Saturday, of course, stopped by your church, got some good food, and then Sunday.
Oh yeah, we had a great time. Yeah, we had a great time. That food was good though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was good. And of course, I brought my brother with me. He got two platters. When I got home and I had my one platter, I was like, damn, I should have got two platters too.
You got two platters.
Yeah, I should have got two because I was a little hungry that evening.
Yeah.
And then Sunday was another chill day. And then Monday, my wife and the kids, we went to Battery Park and had like a little picnic. We stopped at Wawa, got some food, took the dog out there. We did a little bit of fishing, ain't catch jack. But that was pretty much my weekend.
Wait, hold on. Was that the picture that you posted online? It looked like your daughter was falling out the chair or something.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So that that was at Battery Park on yesterday.
That's my spot. Was a lot of people out there?
There were a lot of people, but it wasn't crowded. And it's funny. Battery Park is like a hidden jewel. Every time I go out there, I always forget how nice it is.
Yeah. Been going there for years since I was young, and it's one of those places that you can just woosah in. You know what I mean? It's really a calming place. You know what I mean? And, you know, I remember a cousin of mine when we were kids, they used to call it the Garden of Eden, our Garden of Eden, you know, because it just felt that way, you know.
Right.
It's really, really a nice place. If you, you know, people just go out there and just sit for hours, you know.
Yeah, you well, know? You know, it's funny, like, I was even thinking about, even without kids, you know, me and the wife, or, you know, even without the wife, like, I could literally go see, I could see going there with, like, a blanket, you know, have all my battery packs for, you know, my cell phone, but, like, just chilling out there. I mean, it's peaceful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the way, that's what a lot of people do. I mean, you literally have people that go there every day. I mean, yeah. And either walk or they're just sitting there just watching the water or whatever the case may be, watching the boats and so forth. So, yeah, that's really a cool thing. Well, you sound like you had a busy weekend, man. And I keep forgetting this is, you know, we had that holiday yesterday, Memorial Day, and we want to thank everybody who has served. Somebody said something that was pretty poignant to me. We have a habit of saying happy Memorial Day to everybody. Well, when you talk to people who serve, they say, don't say happy Memorial Day.
Right.
To say, you know, Memorial Day, because after all, it's about those people who serve. That's it's their day, but it's really about the people who lost their lives.
Right.
You know? So it's not necessarily a happy moment, you know? So people who are servicemen, they really take that seriously. But we want to take a moment from News and Trends and say thank you to all of those that did serve and are serving now. So happy.
Definitely.
Memorial, you know, we want to always recognize Memorial Day, and I'll have to make sure I never say happy Memorial Day again, you know. So, so here we are. It's Tuesday. My weekend, you know, basically kind of shot by, but that fish fry, you know, we were busy that day and had a lot of fun doing that. Went to church and basically, I didn't do much of anything else. So, so now get ready to hang out with you for this show. And
you're welcome.
Things, man. Yeah, I know. I'm blessed to hang out with the great Leonard Young, yo. I really is.
The good guy?
Yeah, the good guy.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, you know, look, I introduced one of our faithful listeners to Mr. Leonard Young over the weekend. And she was like, oh, so that's Leonard. You know, and I said, yeah, that's that good guy. You know, so they said,
Dave,
oh.
Dave, you almost made it seem like a letdown. kind of like her vision of who I was would better than who I actually was.
He says she's still going to listen to the show regardless.
Okay, appreciate it. In fact, hold on. What's her name so we can give her a quick shout out?
Her name is Belinda Dale.
Okay. All right, Belinda, next time you see me, I'm on.
Blanda.
Oh, Blanda, next time?
Yeah.
Okay, Miss Dell, next time I see you, I'm going to try to make a better impression. There it is.
There you go. All right, let's get into it, man. I know we got some things to talk about, and we just want to take and say our, you know, deepest condolences and prayers to the people that lost their lives out there in Uvalde, Texas. That was another senseless shooting that happened. You know, actually, we had just gotten off the air last week when I saw it break through on the news. So, you know, another senseless thing. Just want to say, you know, our prayers to the families. Okay. All right. I just wanted to get that out of the way, sir.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think our last show or our last regular show kind of caught the very end of that. So we didn't get to speak about it.
Right. So, but what we're going to talk about today, sir?
All right, Dave. So, you know, the first one, and this is probably breaking news, you know, facts are still coming out, but there was a video going around social media. Not sure if you had seen it yet, but there was a pregnant lady who was shot 5 times by police, kind of involving a stolen car situation. So, and, you know, as I said, this news is still developing, but what appears to have happened is that possibly the lady and another gentleman were in a car that was labeled as stolen. When the cops pulled the car over, the two people got out the car, you know, attempted to kind of flee the scene. And apparently, you know, I guess the cops were kind of giving them warning. And as they were fleeing the scene, this is what witnesses say, that the lady told the cops that she was pregnant, and somehow or another, the cops shot at her 5 times. It looks like not killing her, but definitely hospitalizing her. And so, you know, now there's just a lot of controversy where if a pregnant lady is running from the scene with her hands up, as some witnesses have said, and the cops are still shooting. Per the New York Daily News, the police officer is stated as saying, I guess they did not hear it, you know, that that's just the rumor, but there's some witnesses that that state that it was clearly verbally indicated that she was pregnant. So a lot of people are very upset. Apparently this happened Friday and it happened in Kansas City, Missouri. So, you know, a lot of people are upset. And, you know, I think it's just one of the things where, I mean, not to say if she was a white lady, it would or would not have happened, but when people are getting shot fleeing the scene of, you know, incidents or situations, you know, I mean, to me, that just seems wrong in all senses of the word. And I personally would think, you know, unless she's like, you know, Sha'Carri Richardson, that if the pregnant lady is running away from police, that's somebody you could probably catch on foot. What you think, Dave?
Well, I think it's a messed up situation. Of course, not absolving what they did that was allegedly wrong, you know what I'm saying? But still, nobody should be shot that way. After all, hey, we got a guy that walked into a grocery store up in Buffalo, New York with guns, 18-year-old, and they spent a lot of time talking to that kid and making sure he put those guns down. They didn't shoot him after he shot all those people. Right. Okay. So I, you know, me being an older person, you know, being a child of the 60s and 70s and knowing that we've always been treated like second class citizens when it comes to stuff like this, it really upsets me. Yes, they put themselves in a situation by allegedly doing what they did, right. But why are we always being hunted and treated as animals? Because that's what it seems like every time we turn around, some black or minority person,
but majority black,
yeah, majority black is being shot and white people are being arrested.
Yeah. Have you seen one of those so I mean they have different ones going around social media, and not to say it's covering everybody because I know it's not, but they're covering some of black people and white people who have been in fairly similar situations, you know, involved with just police incidents. And, you know, there's some white mass murderers who all end up coming out alive. And then there's some black people who were not even, you know, doing anything wrong, and, you know, ended up dead.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, the situations are so many to name, so many to talk about. Either when we're not being shot, we're being handcuffed, thrown to the ground, and have a knee put on us that we can't breathe. We're beaten. It's really sad that we have to go through these things that we have to go through. It's obvious. It's the score is so uneven. It's not even close. You know, that whole Buffalo situation was just prime. That's a prime situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy.
I mean, we can't talk about it. That just happened a couple weeks ago, and that's the prime situation. It's like that kid clearly should have been. And
go ahead, Dave.
I don't want to say it, but you know what I'm thinking, right?
Yeah.
He should have been treated like we would have been treated. I'm gonna put it that way, because we all know what that means,
right?
You know. So it's just a tough thing for me, and especially seeing what I read. I mean, the stuff that's going on in Delaware and in Pennsylvania, you know, mainly Philadelphia. I mean, we're hearing these kind of stories all the time. You know, it's not getting any better. I don't care who's wearing the uniform, it's still the same. You know, I wish there was a way that we can get rid of the bad people out there. But when the bad people look like us, they found a way to get rid of us.
Right.
You know, and it's the same. I feel bad for that young lady. I don't feel that should have happened. You know, of course, it's all about choices, though. You know, you put yourself in situations, you got to deal with the outcome of the situation.
Yeah, no, definitely. I tell my kids that way, too. Like, your friends getting in trouble can get you in trouble, too. You know, as much as them. Guilty by association. Right.
That is so true. And that's why we have so many young people dealing with the issues that they're dealing with now. It's because of the peer pressure that they're under to perform like their friends or to do things like their friends. You know, I mean, you got your kids are at that age where they're very impressionable. And, you know, now you got your daughter getting ready to go into high school. We know what high school was like. That's a whole different world.
Whoa. Slow down, Dave. Slow down.
No, but you know yeah, what I'm talking about.
I get it.
Yeah, when you left out of, you know, elementary school and then middle school and that type of thing, you know, you were kind of protected a little bit. You know, well, these days they're not so much because they got access to everything these days, But you know, you felt a little protected. But when you get in high school, it's a whole different world, because now you gotta change your whole game, you know, because you gotta make sure that you are not being eaten alive, but you gotta also be able to make the decisions that's going to keep you alive,
right?
You know what I mean? As far as your high school life goes, and you know, you just gotta make sure that the decisions that you make are the best decisions for you. You know, because if you make a wrong decision for you, you could be like this young lady and this guy making the decisions that they made that day. Allegedly. I'm right that way.
So, understood.
So, you got anything to add to that?
No, I mean, I agree. I mean, of course, the story is still developing. I think it's hard because if witnesses say that they heard her say she was a pregnant, and let's say the police should have also heard that they were in the same vicinity, you know, I just can't imagine shooting a pregnant lady, fleeing a scene on foot, you know, with her hands up, as the article stated. So that just makes it, you know, almost inhumane to even do.
Well, like I said, being treated like animals, because that's no different than shooting an animal fleeing, you know? Yeah. But haven't we always been, that goes back to slavery days, you know, when we tried
to. Almost like the slave hunter.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I went back and watched 12 Years a Slave over the weekend.
Dave, you're always watching movies, aren't you?
Yeah. That was it. It was just interesting, you know, because that was no different than some of the scenes I saw in that movie. You know what I mean? That type of situation.
Right.
But I guess we'll keep an eye on the story and see what happens. So hopefully there's some type of justice made in this situation. Because it's definitely not right. It's not all right to do what they do.
So. Yeah, so it happened Friday. So I'm sure maybe by, next week, Tuesday, we'll have some updates regarding, you know, some outcomes. And hopefully they're positive for the, for the pregnant mother involved.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see what happens. So,
all right. So, Dave, so next, this is a very interesting topic, too. So, you know, just looking through Twitter, there was a Twitter post that was talking about, you know, so, of course, you know, there are a lot of professions or a lot of careers that, you know, make six figures, that, you know, take, you know, degrees, master's degrees, doctorate degrees, PhDs, all that. But they were like, you know what? Let's do a post about, you know, careers where you can make $100,000 and not have a professional degree or a college degree. Now, I do want to preface with some of these you do need licenses for, or you do need, you know, certificates or certification, but, you know, still not necessarily a college degree. So, and in fact, I know we talked about some offline. Do you happen to have any careers that you know can make more than $100,000 that don't necessarily need a college degree?
Electrician.
Yeah.
Plumber. Yeah, because all you need is you just need to get those certifications.
Right.
What else? Here's a good one. Interpreter.
Okay. Yeah. I did not know that. Yeah, I didn't know they made that much, but I don't doubt it.
Yeah, if you get the certification, you become a certified interpreter. You can do it without going to school. And, and especially if you get hooked up with one of the companies that do interpreting. Like we use an interpretation agency for social services. We have every language. We have every language that you can think of.
Oh, wow. So are they in-house or they're via like a phone?
No, we call them on, and they're assigned to, we have an account number with them. And if we needed someone that speaks Portuguese, we needed someone to speak Chinese. it's amazing. You know, we can get somebody, you know?
Right.
And we'll just do a conference call with the client, you know?
So, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So some other careers that they talked about, and I thought was interesting. So, of course, they talked about a lot of technical careers. So, you know, they were saying that there are a lot of technical careers that you can go through certain trainings, like a 3-month training, 6-month training, get a certification. Some that you can do without a certificate. I'm sorry, not there's some that you can do on your own. And actually, it's funny because I've seen some Google offers some free trainings that you can do online and you can get a certificate from Google. You know, if you pass their test, which is interesting because then it's like, okay, now you have some skills that can assist you in getting a better job. They also talked about hairstylists, and they, if you know, like I know, like these, you know, are Black women getting their hair done at the rates that they get their hair done?
Yeah.
These hairstylists out here make all types of money.
A lot of money.
And I'm not mad at them at all.
Yeah. A lot of money. If you get good at you, if you get good at that craft, oh yeah, they're making a lot of money, you know. And especially the whole braiding, and you know, if you're a dual hairstylist who does styling and braiding, you know, so you know, you can make a lot of money. I mean, there's a lot of jobs out there that you can definitely make a lot of money. And then you have some of these mainstream guys, like my oldest son, he doesn't have any college schooling. He's in the bank. He's been in the banking field for the last 10 years. Almost 10 years. And he's making six figures. You know, yeah. I mean, so it's just a matter, you know, sometimes just being in the right place at the right time, you know, and learning the things that you need to learn. Because once you get in and you start making these, you know, you start making these advancements in the companies that you're working for, and you go do the trainings that they want you to do, you can easily get up there if you have the drive to do so. Of course, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, I will say, that drive and dedication.
Yeah. And I will say about the younger people nowadays, especially the millennial group, a lot of them are people that kind of push their way towards, you know, because it's all about money for them, you know, and they push their way to that area, you know, trying to make themselves better. And being a former instructor at Dawn Career Institute, which was a school for people who were in the medical field, and knowing what they had to, you know, teaching medical assistants and CNAs and dental assistants and all those. Once they get that certification can take them a lot of places. If you know, and you know, I ran into one of my old medical assistant students the other day, and they were making like $80,000 and $90,000 as a medical assistant.
Oh wow!
Because they're working for a particular company that they're really, really busy, and they pay very well. And plus, he's worked a lot of overtime because of what's been going on with the pandemic and everything. So, you know, they made all the money. She makes all the money she can make, you know, so those type of things. So it's out there. And she never had any regular college training. You know, she just got that certification as a medical assistant through Dawn. So,
all right. So how do you feel about less people wanting to pursue career? I'm sorry, more people wanting to pursue careers without going through college.
I'm more power to them. I mean, look, if I was coming up during this particular time, no way I would go to college. I didn't want to go then. So no way would I go to college. I would find a niche, find my way into it and work it. That's what I would, you know, would I rule out going to a school like Dawn or someplace I can get a certification? I would do something like that. This is a microwave society. We're in,
yeah, so, it is, definitely.
Yeah. So if I can get something quick, yes, that's what I'll do.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's hard too, because like what I'm seeing now, like with a lot of the parents I know who have kids who are right around that high school age, is, you know, so traditionally it's been ingrained in our brains to go to high school, go to college, get a good job. But, you know, now, I don't know, you know, all this work from home and all the online social media is kind of throwing a monkey wrench in a lot of it, where I know there's a lot of debates on kids who do not want to go to college and their parents basically saying, you're going to go to college. So, and Dave, I was looking at a graph the other day too, if you could see, and you've probably seen too, if you could see how the price, the cost of college has risen versus the average income in the last 30 years, the average income has like doubled. The cost of college has like quadrupled.
It's crazy.
So, I mean, you know, college ain't no, you know, it ain't no lightweight where it's like, okay, you're going to make someone go there.
You're sounding your life away. I mean, if you're not getting a full scholarship that's paying for everything, it's signing your life away.
Right.
It's crazy. And no, I'll be honest with you. I would not do it now. I would not do it.
Yeah. I mean, I like college for the experience. I had a great time at Florida A&M, the number one HBCU in the nation. But what happened?
Go ahead.
But go ahead. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the experience was great. Like, I wouldn't want to give that up. But, if I just think about, so only for about 1 year after college did I work in my field. After that, everything I've done after that, I did not need a degree. In fact, I didn't even need, Dave, the job I got out, the engineering job I got coming out of college, I didn't even need a degree. In fact, I didn't even actually have my degree because it was a little mix up at the school. Mm-hmm. I hadn't officially graduated, but I was out of there. But the first job I got at an engineering company, they never even asked for it.
Well, it is so funny that Leonard is talking about this, folks, because I've known Leonard all this time and never knew he was an engineering major until recently. And oh, I was goodness. Like, yeah, I know, because I would thought he all, you know, because he's always been a techie guy to me. You know, I always thought he was doing something, you know, on that side in college. But, you know, here he was. He was an engineering major. He went to school
for engineering.
And look how far away.
Barely passed.
Yeah.
I barely got out of there, Dave.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, so that's the thing. You know, you go to school, you go, like, I was a psych major. Leonard was an engineer. You know, and you go to school, you do this. I'm working close to my field, but I mean, but it's crazy because a lot of people go to school and then they spend all of their time and money there, and then they come out and they drive a bus.
Right. Or, you know, even worse than that, a lot of people go to school because they're told to, and they drop out at some point or stop going. And now you have student loans and you didn't even get to, you know, complete anything.
Yeah, it's crazy. Some people, now, not saying that there aren't successful people. I don't want to be, if people listen to it, hey, I went to school and I was, you know, I did this. And, you know, I'm glad I went. No, we're not talking about you guys because you guys did what you went there to do. I told Leonard recently about a story that I heard. I did tell you this, right? About Steve Harvey. I told you about that.
Maybe not.
Okay, Steve Harvey, I'll tell you the story real quick about, and this just tells you about college. Steve Harvey said he was in college, and it was his junior year. He had been there all that time. He basically was messing up in school. He said he was too busy partying, having a good time, or whatever. You know, he was a Q and everything. You know, he was just doing the life. He wasn't worried about studying or whatever. And he said he had this crew that he would hang around with. And so when it was getting, you know, by the time the end of their junior year, they all were sitting around having this conversation. And, you know, they were talking about what they, you know, since they were already going to their senior year, what they wanted to do when they got done school. So they're all talking about it and whatever. And he said something to this one particular guy. And he said, well, what do you plan on doing when you get done school? He said, I'm going to be famous. He said, I'm going to do everything I can to become famous. And he said, you know, so I'm using this experience to help me with doing the things necessary that I need to do to become famous. Now, what was so interesting, because he's talking about this guy, and then he later says, well, let me tell you the guy's name. And he says, his name was Arsenio. And he said, yes, that Arsenio. And he said, yes, me and Arsenio Hall went to school together. And he said that this guy, this brother told him, would tell us that all the time. He said, I ended up dropping out after my junior year, and I kind of lost track of him, you know, after my junior year. And he said that later on, you know, 2 years later, he's working these odd jobs or whatever because he'd messed up, you know, he wasn't in school anymore. He had to make a little bit of money or whatever. And he turns on this TV show, and this TV show used to come on at midnight, and they would have all these different entertainers on there. And there was a comedian on there. The comedian was Arsenio Hall. And he said, oh my God, he said, Arsenio's on TV. And he's going crazy because he couldn't believe that Arsenio's on TV. Well, so he looked him up, found him, got in touch with him, talked to him over the phone, said, man, I saw you on TV. He said, you really made it. You really made it. He said, man, he said, I told you I was going to be famous. He said, I'm working on it. I'm working on it. And he said, now keep in mind, he wasn't even really faint Arsenio yet.
Right.
But he had made it. And he had some help along the way because he went on tour with his very famous aunt, who nobody knew he was related to at the time, Nancy Wilson, who was his aunt. And she took him on tour with him. And that's how Arsenio's career took off, you know, and he became famous. You know, and Arsenio threw Steve Harvey a bone once. He was performing at a comedy show. He said, Steve, you always been a funny cat. He said, come do a set with me one day. And that's how Steve's career took off. Gotcha. You know, so this is just saying, I just said all of that, you know, to say, you know, it's not always about college. It's not always about the knowledge that you receive. It's what you do with the knowledge that you do have, you know, and you know, if you decide to go another way, go for it. I mean, after all, look at you. I mean, you living in Beverly Hills, and you have you living in Beverly Hills. Don't shake your head. You know,
no, I'm shaking my head.
And you got you own a couple trailer parks, and you're doing well.
Dave got to mess around and get me robbed up here. People got to think I really got it like that.
I know. I'm just saying. But, you know, but this wasn't your career path. You know, and a lot of people, it's not their career path. But somehow things work out. And that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing I can say to piggyback off that, if there are people who have a passion and they hustle, or they're a hustler or a hustlerina or whatever, you know, there's a lot of success that they can get because, you know, they have that type of drive. So, I mean, I get it. You know, people go to high school, go to college, get a great job. Hopefully, I mean, it's not even guaranteed, but you know, there's people who have a dream, a passion, and when they go after it, you know, 100%, you know, they can be just as fortunate as the best people with, you know, master's degrees and all that stuff too.
There you go. Because there's a lot of master's degrees, people with master's degrees and double masters and all that kind of stuff that are not making the money that they thought they were going to make either. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Not doing what they thought they were going to do. So that's interesting. And we, you know, so for those that are, you know, doing their thing, kudos, hats off to you. Okay. All right.
So Dave, so
it's gonna be interesting. This next story is gonna be interesting. I'm gonna tell you. So go ahead and tell us about it.
Yep. So for this next story, we're gonna talk about a new word that has come into the nation's capital called Blaxit. Damn, Dave. I really wish we had a call in right now because like I would love to hear. Yeah, what people think the word Blaxit means.
Well, we're encouraging people to write in about this story after you hear what we had to say about this, because this is really interesting as to what is really going on with this. So, but go ahead.
Sure. So there's been an article in a lot of newspapers today in the last day or two, and they are specifically talking about the word Blacksit. And what they're referring to is the mass exodus of White House staffers that are just leaving their employees. They're leaving the White House. So the headline of the article said, Biden and Kamala's White House Blacksit, 21 Black aides have left the administration since December of 2021 because there's little support from their supervisors and few chances for promotion. Under that, it states the White House is having a hard time holding on to Black staffers. It started in December 2021 where Kamala Harris's chief spokesperson, Simone Sanders, who landed a job at MSNBC with her own show. Then it went to public engagement head Cedric Richmond. And then I'm just reading right here. So they complain about being overworked, underpaid, and little support from supervisors, no room for promotion. And I'm like, man, this is crazy. I mean, it almost sounds, you know, I know in the Trump administration, I remember like every other week somebody was leaving his campaign, leaving the White House. But I mean, this right here just not looking good. 21 people, Dave. So that's about two or three people a month.
Yeah, that's a lot, man, including Kamala Harris. So, but I'm just saying.
Hold on. When you said including her, I thought you meant like she unofficially left her position too. She just floated by somewhere. Okay.
Well, she did. I mean, you know, when I look at it, you know, has anybody look? She's like Waldo right now. Have we seen her? You know. So, no. The only thing I can say about that is that it is true. I was watching something on TV the other day, and they mentioned exactly that. They were saying how many Black people, but I think the whole thing just has to be the fact that I don't think it has to deal with who is in the White House. Like, well, Trump, you know, we know Trump didn't have many Black people
right
under him. So, and that was obvious, but Biden brought in a lot of Black people when he came into office. But I just think that the way that everything is set up, that might have something to do with it too. I don't think you can blame it directly on Biden.
So who are you blaming it on?
I just think it's the way the government is set up in those offices that a lot of them are holding are set up, because they've been that way for a long time. And if you're not white, that's what, I mean, because it seemed like when you look at the old school politicians, the Mitch McConnells and the Nancy Pelosi's and those type of people, you don't hear them complaining about anything, do you? Because they're in positions, they ain't going nowhere unless they want to go anywhere, and so forth and so forth. Put a Black person in one of those positions. Let's see how long they last, first of all. You know, that's the only thing. Because what's going to happen is they're going to find something wrong with that person. Now, we know Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi both have issues, okay? But because they're that old white regime, that's where they are. And they're going to be there until they decide to leave, to be honest with you. So those people who are leaving, as you say, the Blacksit thing that's going on, those people that are leaving, they have, you know, they're probably looking at it as saying, we are stuck in these positions and we can't get out of these positions or go anywhere because the way this system is set up, it's set up for us to be that way. So that's why. And I think it's a shame. And that's why, I mean, look at Kamala. You know, I was joking in the beginning saying that she left, but when's the last time you heard anything from her? Of any substance.
I mean, I haven't been looking, but I haven't seen anything either.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, you know, that's the thing. And that's the only problem with what we're looking at, because it's important that we understand that these people, you know, I have a friend that was that's been a chef there in DC for a long time. He's been under four administrations, I think, and he's told me some things about how things are. They're, you know, working in the White House and in DC itself. First of all, if you're a non-white person down there in DC, even so, DC is supposed to be full of us. They still rule, and they get what they want. And he's made that clear. He has had sous chefs that worked under him that's making more money than he is right now.
Currently? Oh, hold on. People who previously
who got promoted.
Okay.
And right. Got put into situations that has gotten them in a better financial situation than he's in at this point.
Gotcha.
And this guy has worked his way to being the main chef. He was the main chef in the White House up until recently. There's a new guy in there now. But he's moved on to do some other private stuff, you know.
So you're saying he kind of worked his way up, is that correct?
Yeah, he worked his way up. But then he's had people who worked under him that were white that advanced a lot further than he did because they got connected to other whites. You know what I'm saying?
So they worked their way up for a better income in his same direction, or they left that company and now they're up higher.
They started out under him,
uh-huh.
But because they got connected to other people, white folk, you know, I'm going to say, who helped raise them up, you know, they make more money than him now, you know, gotcha. Or they put them in, like, he was talking about one particular guy that's like one of the top chefs, ended up in one of the top restaurants down there. And he was saying, that guy used to work for me. He was cutting vegetables and doing stuff for me. And all of a sudden now he's, you know, I applied because he said that he applied for that position as the head chef there at that restaurant. And he didn't get it. This guy got it.
Gotcha. Because, you know, one thing I was going to say while you were saying that I thought was kind of interesting too is, so you remember how we were just talking about previously that the younger people, they have the microwave mentality. They want it now. So I can see, and I feel like older people are more likely to say, you know, let me find a good job. I'm about to just stick it, you know, ride it out. So if there were people that were under him and if they were younger, you know, I can definitely, and I'll probably say this for any job. If two people are starting out, let's say entry level, and one person just works their way up, I can see, and I mean, there's no facts behind this. I can see that, the person who is always looking for the next opportunity rising faster than the person who is going to stay in a position and kind of, you know, just work their way, quote unquote, to the top. So I wonder in his case, because you said, because I mean, he's still in the same upline that he was in before, right? He hasn't really crossed over to different companies, or
you know, he's doing very well down there. He's still, you know, he's not working in the White House now,
though. Mm-hmm.
But he has his own business as a chef.
Okay, and you know, and I just say it to say, I feel like millennials who are always looking for the next opportunity, here 2 years looking for a better job, here 2 years looking for a better job. I feel like in general, I feel like they would climb that ladder, that pay ladder faster, because they're just, you know, like, you know, what's the next best opportunity?
Yeah, I agree.
So I agree. When I think about the White House, I'm thinking, okay, you know, a lot of people probably just want to put that on their resume, you know, and if I'm leaving the White House, you know, I got White House on my resume. Like, who's not going to hire me when I got White House on my resume? And, yeah. You know, I'm also wondering, okay, if they have 21 people leaving, does that give like the ones who are sticking around, you know, an option to kind of move up that ladder quicker? Or are they hiring outside those positions?
I guess it all depends on how black they are.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because if they're you know, what we consider to be one of those, you know, white blacks, if you know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
you know, that will be willing to put themselves in position to get those jobs that would make them more acceptable, you know, to the other race, you know, and so that they can get in position to be in some of the position, but they're only going to let us get us so high. I remember watching, here we go again, another TV references, but watching Scandal with Olivia Pope and the whole DC stuff that was going on there. Right. And there was a thing talking about politicians, and one of the guys was up there talking about how, you know, he was moving up and he was one of these fast rising, you know, young guys who was moving up through the ranks in DC. And then he got so high and he got stopped. And they said, oh, this is it, young man. You ain't getting any higher than this, you know? And he had a colleague that was white, and that, you know, and even though this guy clearly was the superstar of the two, the colleague got moved up and he was still in the same position. You know, so those type of things, when you see these stories or whatever on TV unfold in front of you, you better believe they're coming from somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. So, you know, I just think this is something that this has to deal with. It's not so much about Biden, so to speak. I just think it's just the way the system is set up. You gotcha. Know, it's a system thing, except for Kamala leaving. So I'll go back to that again. So that's, yeah.
Poor Kamala.
That's poor Kamala. Yeah. So, all right. You guys are listening to News and Trends with Dave and Len. We thank you for listening at this time and being faithful listeners. For those of you who have been faithful listeners, and for you new guys that just joined us, you know, welcome aboard. And if you have anything to say, any feedback, whatever, especially about that last story that we just talked about, please feel free to let us know your thoughts. We definitely will talk about it. We'll post it. If you don't mind us posting your thoughts, we can post it as well and give you our thoughts on what you have to say. So thank you for taking the time to listen to us. Our next story is something I came across. I just thought was pretty interesting. You know, when you are a superstar, and I don't care what business it may be, I guess you have to have a certain amount of cockiness to you, right? I guess you gotta know that you are good at what you do and that you put in the work and that you can be as vain and cocky as you want to be. What do you think about that? I mean, do you agree with that statement?
You know, I think people who are super cocky don't even realize they're cocky. So they just,
yeah.
I mean, you know, they just do what they do. And they, I mean, for the uncocky, or let's say the humble person, you know, I would even say for the humble person, it's hard to be cocky. So when you see them cocky people, I just feel like they can't, like, that's just them. They can't help it. And they probably don't even realize it half the time.
Well, when you think about it, though, because there's different forms of cockiness. There's the ones that are outright cocky and you just, like, you know, they're telling you, I'm this, I'm that, I'm this. But then you have the cocky people who, you know, hey, they're the S, you know, they're this, you know, they're everything, you know, like a Beyonce or Jay-Z or, you know, Michael Jackson had that kind of cockiness. But, you know, because you knew that once they walked into the room, it was all about them. You know what I mean? Rihanna, right. Another one. Drake is even like that. You know, that type of person. And we know Drake, you know, he thinks he does stuff anyway. So anyway, so this is what I'm talking about. But this story that I'm leading in, what I'm leading into is something I came across about Michael Jordan. Now, we all know Michael Jordan is supposedly the greatest basketball player to ever live, professional basketball player to ever live. And of course, you know, he had the big thing that came out during the pandemic about The Last Dance, talking about his championships with the Bulls and so forth. And you got to really, for those who didn't get to see Michael play, because, you know, a lot of people grew up with watching like his protege, like Kobe Bryant. A lot of the younger guys connected more with Kobe Bryant or LeBron James and those type of guys. So, but for those of us who watch Michael, myself is included, Michael Jordan was the truth. I mean,
I agree.
He was unbelievable. And it wasn't just his basketball. It was just him. You know, he's that type of guy that walks in the room, you'd be like, Michael, you know, that dude's the man. The way the swag that he had, you know, he invented swag, if you ask me.
He
invented it. I mean, there was one guy before him that had it, but Michael took it to another level, and that was Dr. J. I don't know if you knew enough about Dr. J, but Dr. J had that swag too. But Michael studied Dr. J and took it to a whole nother level. And so, plus, Mike would come in and tell you, he's the type of guy who would come in and tell you, this is what I'm going to do to you. And at the end of the night, you'll read the box score and it'll be exactly what he said. You know what I mean? That was Michael Jordan, you know? So the reason I brought this up was Michael, when he was in his first playoff, his very first playoff, he was in the league a couple of years at this time. He's playing against the Boston Celtics in the playoffs and Larry Bird, who, of course, everybody knows Larry Bird. He was one of the greatest players to ever play, white player. Larry, they used to call him Larry Legend. He's playing against Larry Bird in the best out of five playoff series. Celtics were definitely the better team and were picked to win. But this is the first time Jordan gets in the playoffs. Jordan plays in the first game, has 49 points. Boston couldn't stop him. Second game comes around, he scores 63 points the next game. So Larry Bird, of course, they couldn't stop him. Larry Bird goes on to say, this dude must be God. You know, this is what God looks like. God looks like Michael Jordan. You know, so, you know, and of course, it was a great compliment. And Larry Bird, who wasn't one to give out compliments like that, especially the black basketball players, I would say, you know, Larry was a little suspect back then, you know, so.
And he was from Boston.
He was from French Lick, Indiana.
Oh, Indiana, that's right. Okay.
But French Lick, Indiana. not Indianapolis or any place like that, you know. All these, you know, now somebody pays you a big compliment like that. You normally somebody would reach out and say, oh, you know, they're flattered, you know, thank you for the compliment, whatever. Michael never said thank you. He heard about the comment. He knew Larry said it. Larry made sure everybody knew he said it. And he never said a word to Larry Bird about that comment. So it comes out recently, a reporter says to him, you know, Michael, you know, when Larry said something to you about, you know, being God and so forth and so forth. He said, did you ever say anything to Larry? Did you guys ever have a conversation about that comment? Did you ever thank him for it? Michael said, no, But that's Michael Jordan. And so they said, well, why wouldn't you, you know, comment about it or say thank you or whatever? He said, because I didn't want Larry to feel that I might be weakened by that comment because I was so, you know, I was so ingratiated by it or whatever the case may be. And he wouldn't give him any signs of weakness. And he said, I just wanted to make sure, no matter how he felt about me and my game, that I was on point all the time and I wanted to beat him. And he said, I was not going to let him, because, you know, he said back then, a lot of guys used to try to use, you know, mind tricks, you know, say, oh, man, you're really good. And you this and you that and whatever. You get out there and fall flat on your face because you're too busy, you know, being, you know, soaking up what they said about you. So you don't want to play hard against them. He said, nah, he didn't want any of that. You know, Michael Jordan was a very petty guy. He really was.
But you know, in a certain way, I can understand it. If I'm playing a competitive sport like basketball or football, I'm probably not, at least during the game, I'm not going to let anybody hype me up like, oh, man, that was a great catch. Like, because, you know, I know they don't mean it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Michael, and first of all, Michael would never, Michael was such a competitor. He would never tell you, you know, you're good. You know, he's not going to tell. I think, you know, one thing, him and Kobe, like Kobe Bryant was fascinated by Michael Jordan. He was like a fanatic when it came to Michael Jordan. He wanted to be like him. He wanted to copy his style and everything. And Jordan said that they'd be in games and Kobe be asking them questions. Like he just doing more. He said, well, how did you do that? How you perfect that? And so forth and so forth. And Michael just look at him and say, will you shut up? You know, because he said Kobe became like his little brother.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was annoying. He said Kobe was very annoying because he wanted to know everything, you know. And
but, you know, real quick, I was going to say, there was a little video going, well, of course, everything's on social media. It was about a 1 minute clip of them going back and forth during a game. And it's funny because both of them must have been mic'd up because you could hear every word they said. Yeah. But, you know, but it sounded just like you said, like they had that friendly rivalry.
Yeah.
You know, you could definitely tell Kobe was a fan. And you could tell, even though Michael Jordan gave him that annoying little brother attitude, that, you know, there was something about Kobe that he recognized that he liked.
Yeah. And that's what, and that's true, because they did have that relationship. And, you know, you could see in everything that Kobe did that, you know, Kobe used to wear number 8, and he changed his number to number 24 because of Michael Jordan.
Right.
Because he was the next guy. Michael Jordan's number was 23. So Kobe anointed himself the heir apparent to him. And so he changed the number to 24 because he was next. Okay. So that's what their relationship was about. And of course, when Kobe, you know, unfortunately passed away in that accident and so forth, Michael Jordan was the one that spoke at his thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he talked about how Kobe studied, you know, how him and Kobe would talk and how Kobe, you know, he said he was annoying as hell. That's what he would always say. He was annoying as hell, but he said, I wouldn't have had it any other way. He was that guy, you know. But I tell you about another story about Jordan and his pettiness, you know. And Jordan, brought his Hall of Fame, his Hall of Fame ceremony. For those that didn't hear this story, he brought his high school teammate to the Hall of Fame ceremony because Jordan got cut his junior year on the basketball team, and his best friend in high school made the team, and he got cut. So he made sure that his high school friend was at his Hall of Fame ceremony, and he's up there talking about being cut from that team. And he said, this is for the coach that cut me. And my friend who's sitting out there in the audience, he made sure the camera went on him and said, I guess they were wrong, huh?
Dirty.
And the spotlight was on the dude. The dude put his head down. He turned all red with the white guy. He turned all red and everything, you know, because Jordan put him on the spot, you know, and said, you know, I guess they were wrong. So, but I just thought that was interesting, this story, you know, about Jordan, especially with all that we've heard. I don't know if you ever watched The Last Dance. The Last Dance was a fascinating thing. Even if you wasn't a basketball fan, just watching Jordan whole court and just being him and seeing how his teammates reacted, because a lot of his teammates didn't like him, by the way, but they loved playing with him.
Right.
You know?
Well, I mean, they love winning.
They won six championships. I mean, right. Come on now, you know? So Jordan meant hardware, you know, he meant rings and everything else. So, but I just thought that was an interesting story to talk about. And especially, you know, just adding to the legend of Michael Jordan. So, all right, moving on to my next story, or our next story. Speaking of watching, you know, documentary, like I said, on Michael Jordan and whatever, The Last Dance, I was watching a show. I'm calling the segment What We're Watching. I was watching a show, and I'm recommending this show to you, Leonard. I think it's something you should look at.
Is it on Peacock?
Because
you still ain't gave me that pass. Well, it's on
HBO. You don't need it. You got HBO. So, you know, it's on HBO.
Okay.
And so stop the Peacock stuff. And it's really good because it's a true story. And I think they did, you know, with some true stories, they don't do them justice sometimes, right, where the case may be. I think they did a good job with this. And it's only six episodes, by the way. But it's called We Own This City. And it's about these corrupt cops down there in Baltimore. This happened around 2015, 2016 through 17, when about these guys who were called the GTTF. They were a task force, plainclothes task force that was out there in the streets. And it was about six of these guys. And they were out there, you know, cleaning up the streets of Baltimore. This all took place in Baltimore. The show was done by the same guy, Mr. David Simon, that did The Wire. Kind of has that Wire kind of feel. Matter of fact, there's quite a few guys from The Wire in the show. And I was a big Wire fan. I know Leonard didn't watch The Wire, but.
No, because you ain't give me that HBO password. I didn't have HBO.
Well, The Wire made famous a certain particular actor from Britain by the name of Idris Elba. That's where he came into prominence, was being on the show The Wire. So the show is about, you know, these corrupt cops and what they're doing to people. They're around there arresting people. Man, I'm telling you, you know, they talk about the cop salary is not that much. You know, a lot of cops don't get paid as much as they should because of everything they got to deal with. But these cops were making some money, Leonard. They were out there robbing drug dealers, taking their money from them. You know, they would arrest a drug dealer. They would just rough them up and take, you know, say, this, you know, they'll lock them up and sit them up. Just like if they pull over a car or whatever, they might get a tip that this guy's going to have this amount of stuff in their car or whatever. They'll pull over the car, put the guy in handcuffs, put him over on the sidewalk, and they go through the car, and then they'll find all the drugs and the money or whatever, and they'll keep the money instead of turning it in, or they might turn in $20,000 or $50,000. They didn't found $300,000. You know,
right.
They split it all up amongst each other. These guys were making paper, man. I'm telling you, they were making a killing. Plus, they had some city officials hooking them up they might work 4 hours overtime. This one dude was up there talking about, man, he said, I put in 8 hours overtime last week. I just got a check for $8,000.
Damn. Must be nice.
You know, because the people were up there putting in, you know, more hours and everything. I mean, it was the whole city government was corrupt, man. You know, from the mayor's office, the commissioner, it was just a lot of craziness going on. And the main guy who headed up the task force was a decorated officer in Baltimore, but he got greedy and he started wanting to make money in his own way. He ended up getting 25 years in jail.
Wow.
White cop, but he worked with a lot of black cops. So, this tax force had like four black cops on it. And I think it was two white cops and four black cops. No, it was eight of them. There was four white cops and the rest of them were black. That's right. And, man, it was just crazy just watching the show. And I the first episode I was kind of, cause I wasn't sure what direction they were going, but it got good each episode. And I'm just saying I recommend those people, anybody that lives down or knows anybody down in the Baltimore area where this happened, but you can see the corruption, man, because this not only went from the cops, it went up, you know, it went to the city government and the council, and it was just corruption all over in that situation. And it's really, you know, you wonder why we have the stuff that goes on in our cities when it comes to, the whole policing. And, you know, you have people trying to, trying to redefine what the police duty should be and how the policing should be done, because they're... they wanted to fund the police, because when you see stuff like this show and what really went on down there in DC, I mean, in Baltimore, it's crazy. It really is. It's a mess. And here we are, you know, we're the ones that pay for it, you know, because, you know, because we have to deal with the aftermath of what we see from, right, these corrupt people. So I'm just putting it out there, guys. If you ever get a chance to see it, take a look at it and check the show out for yourself. But it's called We Own This City on HBO. And I just thought it was pretty interesting look into city government, because, you know, we've had some issues here in Delaware, you know, especially our city government. We've had some issues with a lot of stuff that's going on, trying to get things corrected. You know, we've had our problems, especially in Wilmington. So we want to, you know, this type of stuff really kind of gives you an insight on how bad things could get if we don't get a handle on the things that we need to get a handle on.
Gotcha. Anyway. Understood. Huh?
Go ahead. What are you saying?
No. I said understood.
Yeah, so if you get a chance, man, check it out. I just wanted to put it out there. I thought it was a very fascinating show, so I'm recommending that. That's on Dave's must-watch list, okay? So I know Leonard's not going to look at it, folks, but I'm just telling y'all, you know, for my faithful listeners out there that watch shows like I do, you know, so other than 90 Day Fiance and stuff like that. Anyway,
Well, those are all easy watches. You know, turn them all on.
They are hilarious too. Those shows are hilarious. You got to admit that, right? They are. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, yeah. So, the last thing that we're going to talk about tonight is a feel-good story. Every now and then you get one of those feel-good stories where like somebody's life gets changed, or, you know, where you feel that it really feels, it's like one of those stories that you just really feel good for somebody. So there was a story that happened recently about this young lady. Her name is Perry. She did a TikTok video about the whole thing. Leonard, did you get that text I sent to you? Did you see the video?
No, I did not.
Okay. So she did a video of her visiting this Starbucks, and she pulls up to the Starbucks and she is talking to a young man who's at the window. And his name was Manny. And she says to Manny, you know, she's talking to Manny, seemed like a real cool guy. And you could tell, you know, he has some challenges, so forth, you know. And she says to him, what's his dream in his life? And what his dream in his life was. And he tells the girl that he wants to buy a car, which cost around $1,000. So apparently he must have had some type of car already in his mind that he wanted. And then Manny also, just being totally transparent, tells her that, you know, that he was having some challenges in his life and that he wanted to, you know, she could tell that he was struggling with some things and whatever the case may be. And, you know, he wanted to, she listened to him and she wanted to, and I'm trying to find, I want to find the exact thing he said to her. So give me a moment. I want to make sure that I have this right for you guys, because I thought it was pretty poignant what he said. And of course,
where said, of course, it's not coming up easily. Like,
don't you hate technology sometimes?
Yeah, well, you know, I was just telling somebody earlier, technology is either your best friend or your worst enemy, and it can be both at the same damn time.
And for some reason, okay,
I'm gonna say for Dave, my story, I was using Zelle today and I was trying to send somebody some money via Zelle, and I've used it 100 times. And I put someone's information in there and said, your account's on hold. So then I called my bank. I'm on hold 35 minutes for the lady to say, oh, well, this is a business account. You can't send Zelle through here. And I'm like, lady, like I've sent it since I've had this account, like probably over 100 Zelles. And she's like, oh, well, you can't do it. And I'm like, well, I've done it. So then I get off the phone and I realized what I did wrong. So technically I can do it, but yeah, I was like, okay, I wasted all this time for her to say, it was just crazy, but it's just one of them things where it's like, okay, like if she knew what was going on, she could have helped me conquer this.
She didn't want to be bothered. That's what that was.
No, she didn't.
But that's technology for you. But anyway, I found it. It says Manny also said that he was struggling with depression, and the driver then tells him, you know, listening to a story, I'll see you around, and she left. So the next thing in the video, the next thing you see is her going into a store with a friend, and she picks up a bouquet of roses, and then they find this little chest-like thing, and they find this little matchbox car, and she's talking to the camera, and she's saying, we're going to make Manny's dream come true. And she's got like 10 $100 bills in her hand, and she rolls it up and she sticks it in the box where the car is, and puts the box in the chest after they kind of bedazzled the chest, because it was a plain looking chest, and they bedazzled it and made it look cute. Then they drive back. Then they drive back over to the Starbucks. And of course, Manny's there at the window, and they say, hey, Manny, you remember us? You know, we just wanted to try to bring some cheer to you and try to make your day. And she reaches and grabs the flowers and she hands him the flowers. And he says, oh my God. He said, thank you. He said, nobody's ever given me flowers before. And you could tell he was touched, you know, and so forth about that. And then she said, oh, and we got something else for you, too.
And she hands him the little chest, and he looks at it. She said, open it up. And he opens it, and you see the box that had the Matchbox car in it. And she says, go ahead and open it. And he pulls out his little red Matchbox car in there. And then she said, we want you to have your car. There's $1,000 in the box. And he looks in the box, and there's all these $100 bills. And he looks at her and just starts bawling, you know. And it's really a touching video. Over 27 million views, wow. Something like that. You know, 25, 27, somewhere around there. And it's just saying, you know, because this guy, and they asked her why she did it. She said, because he was so transparent about, you know, what he was going through and so forth, that, you know, she just wanted to do something nice for him. And, you know, she knew he would appreciate it. And, you know, and she went and she did this. And, you know, and that video was touching people's lives all over the place. And there was a lot of comments about the video, and everybody was talking about how great it was. You know, hopefully it's not something fake or whatever the case may right. be. You know, because, you know, a lot of this stuff is staged anymore. Yeah, so
just for social media.
Yeah. Yeah, just for social media to get the views, you know. So, but, you know, but if that, you know, if that story was 100% legit, that was a great story. And I just thought it was a feel good story. And, you know, now, hopefully, man, he does go get that car. And, you know, hopefully, man, he has a driver's license.
Right.
But I just thought it was a cool story. And, so people that work in Starbucks, you know, somebody comes to your window, be nice to them. You never know what may happen. So Starbucks is a funny place to me anyway. I just don't get the whole Starbucks thing. Do you go to Starbucks?
Not at all. It's so funny because the other day, so when we had that meetup last Thursday, there was a girl there and she's like, yeah, you know, I saw you at Starbucks. I'm like, who, me? I was like, you ain't seen me at Starbucks because, you know, I don't go there. And she's like, no, it was before the pandemic. And I'm like, the only way I would have been at Starbucks is if I was there meeting somebody else for a meeting. Like, you never see me in there ordering a latte, and a honey bun, you know, nothing like that.
And then they take that stuff so serious in when they're ordering stuff. I was
AKA in there. My wife too. My wife and my daughter. My daughter. Yeah, my daughter too. My daughter has Starbucks on her app. She's 13. She has a Starbucks app. And she got points on there, Dave. She got points.
Is her mother that way too? Is she a Starbucks person?
I don't know.
No,
you asking forbidden territory right there.
Well, no. The only reason I asked that, what would make her get interested in Starbucks?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it would have to be her mom.
If it wasn't you, right? So that's what I'm saying.
No, it definitely wasn't me.
Yeah, a lot of young people seem to be in the whole Starbucks thing. I don't get it. I never got it. And I just remember going in. I've only been into one Starbucks one time. And I went in there with a friend of mine. And I was like, I was watching the people in there. They seemed to be like zombies, you know, or whatever. And they were, I guess I got to be careful. I know we got Starbucks listeners.
Oh, Dave, you know we got some Starbucks listeners on.
Yeah, I don't want to be beat down like, you know, like Beyonce, like bees on, you know, the beehive would get me or whatever. But I'm just saying this one person went off on a barista person because they made their coffee, or I can't call it a coffee, their mocha latte wrong, and didn't put enough cream in it, and didn't make the little thing at the top that they do with the, you know, the design that, you know, to make it look real cool. You know what I'm talking about?
Little swirls, the milk swirls on top.
Yeah. And that person went off in their letter, I'm telling you. And I was like, is it really that serious? Because if so, I'm about to leave. you know, because I didn't know whether the dude was going to bring pull out a gun or what, man. It was just crazy. I mean, that dude went off so bad on that barista. He called for the manager and everything. And I was like, and I was watching the reaction of the people that was in there. And they were all with the dude. They were all like, yeah, you can't mess up. This is serious. Y'all can't mess up like that. Is he new? That's what they kept saying about the barista guy. He must be new because he did. You can't have somebody in here. And especially at this time in the morning, we're trying to get to work. Right. We're trying to do this. You know, I was like, man, that was my only time in a Starbucks, man. I didn't even buy anything. I was just in there, you know, so I didn't want no problems.
Right. I will say one thing, the story you told me makes me think about, and it's not about, it's a roundabout. Has anyone ever bought you flowers? Like, I was just trying to think, I was like, you know, I don't think anyone has ever bought me flowers. So like when you say did you say he cried when he got the flowers or?
Well, he was shocked and he was touched. You can tell he was touched, but that was the first thing out of his mouth. He said, nobody's ever bought me flowers.
Yeah. And I was trying to think, I don't think anyone's ever got me flowers either. You know, I mean, side note, but.
Okay. Well, Father's Day is coming.
Well, first of all, I don't even know if I'd want flowers because I probably wouldn't appreciate them. But, you know, like I'm just thinking when you said they got him flowers, I was like, okay, well.
I've gotten flowers before, so yeah.
Okay. Well, what were they? Daisies, roses, what? Tulips?
Not daisies.
Sunflowers.
They were definitely not daisies, man. They were definitely not daisies. They didn't go in the backyard and pick some daisies for me. No. No, I've gotten roses before. Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right, Dave. Yeah. Never mind. Yeah. I'm about to take it there. And I'm sure that was years ago.
That is something you need to work on there. At least to say that you got them, you know. Maybe you'll get some soon. You know?
Yeah. I have to hope and pray.
Yeah, yeah. So but we want to thank everyone who's listened to us tonight. You know, and yeah, I know we went over quite a few different topics and whatever. We're hoping to hear some feedback on the things that we have that we have put out there for you guys to listen to. Thank you for taking the time to listen to us. And we always appreciate it. Be on the lookout for a t-shirt, by the way. We got, they're going to be showing up real soon, right, Lan?
I don't know. I mean, your connection.
You don't know? What do you mean you don't know?
Dave, this is your connection. Are they going to be showing up real soon? Are you sure?
Okay, hold on. Let me
Dave,
stop.
Are they going to be showing up real soon?
Let me stop him. Okay. Anyway, we have a t-shirt going, coming out. We actually have the design of the t-shirt. So you're going to see the t-shirt posted real soon on our site. And we want everyone, especially our regular listeners, to please purchase one of our t-shirts, the News and Trend with Dave and Len t-shirt. And we're hoping to have some other merchandise that will also go along with it. The t-shirts hopefully will be available hopefully in the upcoming weeks. And we will have multiple colors and also multiple sizes. So in the t-shirt, so please definitely take advantage of being able to purchase those t-shirts once you see them on our site. Thank you again for listening to us, Len. Thank you for your assist with that ad right there.
Of course.
He said, of course.
As always.
As always. That's the good guy over there, guys. Okay. So you want to add before we sign off of here, sir?
The only thing I want to say is actually nothing. Just make sure you check us out on all podcast networks on Friday, our weekend roundup at 6 p.m. And I think that's about it, Dave. That's all I got.
Okay. All right. And with that being said, we're going to say good night. And thank you once again for joining us.
As soon as we go ahead and cue up the music. But Dave, one more thing I just want to let people know if there's anyone out there who is looking for funding for real estate investing, please give me a call. We are offering fix and flip funding, long-term rental funding, commercial mixed use. So if you have an investment property out there, we can go ahead and get it funded.
You notice he said we. Okay, so I'm in on this deal too. Okay. All right.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Yes, Dave. Yep. Refer some business and we in on it. Okay.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. There we go.
But other than that, good to go. And we will see y'all next time.
Okay.
Tune in next week, ladies and gentlemen, for another edition of News and Trends with your hosts, Dave and Lynn.